Mr. Imtiaz Ahmad will wrap up and have a global review on the aquaculture development. And then we will have a plenary discussion afterwards. Mr. Ahmad has 30 years of experience in sustainable rural development programs. As a former World Bank senior professional, he has extensive and diversified experience in developing, supervising, and evaluating projects, and in formulating sector policies, strategies, and plans. He was the team leader for the 3 World Bank-financed fisheries project in Bangladesh. As a consultant, he has worked in the fisheries sector for the World Bank and for the FAO. He is presently working as a consultant for the FAO on the Global Aquaculture Review and Small-Scale Aquaculture. So please, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. This morning and in the afternoon session, you heard presentations regional reviews on aquaculture development. Our presentation is a synthesis of the 6 regional reviews and other major global aquaculture development. This presentation was prepared by myself, Ruhana Subasenge, with support from Chave of FAO. I'm also grateful to FAO for providing statistical information. And in this presentation, we have used numerous photos, you know, some are anonymous, but I would like to thank all of them. Now, this presentation contains 4 sections. The first section presents some of the key characteristics of the global aquaculture. The second section highlights aquaculture's contributions to food security, social and economic development. The third section analyzes the developments in the sector that have contributed to the sector's dramatic growth. And the final section presents the salient issues, the challenges, and the way forward. Now, I'll try to wrap up this presentation before the time limit, as most of it, you know, particularly the data part, you know, was covered in the earlier presentations. Now, globally, the aquaculture sector has further expanded, intensified, and diversified during the past decade. With stagnating global captive fishery production, aquaculture is perceived as having the greatest potential to produce more fish to meet the growing demand. This slide shows that global aquaculture production, this is excluding aquatic plants, increased from 32.4 million tons in 2000 to 52.5 million tons in 2008. In value terms, it was $98.4 billion. With aquatic plants, production was 68.3 million tons in 2008. Seaweeds dominated the world's total production of aquatic plants. The contribution of aquaculture to global food fish consumption increased from 33.8% in 2000 to 45.6% in 2008. In the next slide, you can see that the contribution of aquaculture to the total production of capture and aquaculture was about 37% in 2008. In terms of production by regions, among the regions, Asia-Pacific continues to dominate global aquaculture production, accounting for about 90% by volume and 79% by value in 2008. China alone accounted for nearly two-thirds of world aquaculture production by quantity and more than half by value in the same year. The rapid growth has been driven by a variety of factors, including population and economic growth, technology development, and expanding domestic, regional, and international markets. If you look at this slide, you will see that the growth patterns in aquaculture production are, however, not uniform among all regions. The overall growth rate between 1970 and 2006 was about 7% per annum, but it slowed to about 6% between 2004 and 2008. Now, based on these growth trends, world aquaculture production will continue to grow, but the rate of increase in most of the regions will be reduced in the forthcoming decade. In 2008, the top 15 agriculture. Okay, this is we've gone through it. Yeah. In 2008, the top 15 agriculture-producing countries harvested 92.4% of total world production of food fish from aquaculture. Although we've got 12 over here. But of the 15 countries, 11 were from the Asia-Pacific region. Now, in terms of aquaculture production by environments, fresh water contributed 60% of world aquaculture production by quantity and 56% by value in 2008. In terms of species groups, freshwater fishes continued to dominate. Freshwater fishes was dominated by carps, and the largest producer was China. Now, crustaceans, shown in blue color, have grown at an average annual rate close to 15% during 2000 to 2008, faster than in the previous decade. The rapid increase was due largely to the dramatic increase of white-legged shrimp, the Elvanami culture in China, Thailand, and Indonesia. Okay. Introduced species have made substantial contributions to global aquaculture production, particularly in Asia. Examples are tilapias and white-legged shrimp. The next slide, I'm now moving to section 2 of the presentation. Aquaculture's contribution to food security, social, and economic development. Although precise data are lacking, based on various studies and surveys, aquaculture's production to food security, poverty reduction, and employment and gender opportunities increased over the past decade. Contribution to food security. The average annual per capita supply of food fish from aquaculture has increased by 10 times, from 0.7 kg in 1970 to 7.8 kg in 2008. Food fish provided about 20% of the total animal protein supply in developing countries. In many countries, the contribution is about 50%. Contribution to social development. Fisheries and aquaculture provide direct and indirect livelihood support to millions of people around the world. In 2006, an estimated 8.7 million people were directly involved in development of aquaculture, or about 20% of the total. 9 out of 10 people employed in aquaculture were from Asia. China alone accounted for slightly more than half of the people employed. In addition, a large number of people are engaged in ancillary activities, for example, processing, marketing, and research. And in many countries, such activities are mainly carried out by women. The increased livelihoods opportunities have decreased rural-urban migration and enhanced women's empowerment. Now, contribution to economic development. Aquaculture makes valuable contributions to local, national, and regional economies through goods and services sold on the domestic and export markets. In many countries, aquaculture's contribution as a proportion of total GDP is small, but its importance to the national economy in terms of poverty alleviation and nutritional benefits is insignificant. At the regional level, aquaculture's contribution to the economies of many countries in the Asia-Pacific region is relatively higher, with Vietnam in the lead. During the coffee break, I was talking to Dr. Lu, he's a director of research, aquaculture research in Vietnam, and he mentioned to me that aquaculture's contribution to GDP is in fact around 4%, but if you include value added, it will go up to 8%. So it's one of the highest in the world, you know. And the next part of the presentation is on section 3. Over the past decade, the major developments that have contributed to the significant growth of the global aquaculture sector are good governance and management of the sector, impressive development of aquaculture markets and trade, and wide dissemination and use of information. Next, globally, it is now recognized that good governance is central to achieving sustainable economic and social development. An encouraging trend is that an increasing number of countries have formulated or are in the process of formulating aquaculture policies, strategies, plans, and legislations that facilitate growth and efficient management of the sector. For example, a study by FAO, this was done in 2004, showed that the aquaculture sector has been most effectively mainstreamed in Asia, in the case of poverty reduction strategy papers and national development plans, closely followed by Africa. At the global level, many governments comply with both voluntary and mandatory requirements of a number of international instruments, example, FAO Code of Conduct for Responsible Fisheries and Convention on Trade in Endangered Species, the CITES. In the earlier session, if you remember, Carlos mentioned about governance as being an issue in the Latin America and the Caribbean region. I think this is something which we hopefully will be discussing further in the thematic sessions. You know. Next, application of economic incentives is also considered an important tool to motivate both large and small-scale aquaculture producers to invest in responsible aquaculture operations. Many governments provide fiscal incentives such as tax holidays to foreign investors and creating an environment, enabling environment for privatization. Aquaculture producer associations contribute to good governance, such as shaping and influencing policies and regulations, providing technical services and sharing of knowledge, and promoting codes of conduct, good aquaculture practices, and better management practices. Examples are the Federation of European Aquaculture Producers, development of its own code of conduct, as Laszlo mentioned in his session presentation, and more than 30 sustainability indicators of sector performance. The second one is the catfish farmers of Nigeria's sharing of knowledge on best management practices to its members. At a global level, the COFI Subcommittee on Aquaculture identified data sharing and reporting to improve knowledge and management of the sector as a key priority area. Examples are FAO's work to improve progress reporting on the implementation of the FAO Code of Conduct for Responsible Fisheries, and Canada's advanced data reporting, which follows the sustainability reporting model developed by the Global Reporting Initiative. On markets, markets for fish and fishery products vary in terms of location, ranging from domestic to regional to international markets. Consumers' tastes and preference for aquaculture products also vary widely. Of the top 10 exporters of fish and fishery products in value terms, three were from the Asia region. China was the world's largest exporter. New markets emerging, and this was also mentioned by Sena, you know, when he referred to the markets. For example, a number of high volume but relatively low value species such as tilapias and catfish are increasingly being traded in large quantities, not only nationally and within major producing areas, but also at the international level. There has been an increasing globalization of the fisheries value chain, with more and more processes in developing countries being contracted by firms mostly located in developing countries. In response to consumers' concerns, issues such as food safety, traceability, certification, and eco-labeling are becoming increasingly important and are considered as a high priority. There's an increasing demand for certification of aquaculture production systems, practices, processes, and products. There's also a need for harmonization of standards. There have been two significant global-level developments in the area of aquaculture certification. The first is FAO's just-completed work on the development of international guidelines on aquaculture certification. The guidelines cover a range of issues, A, animal health and welfare, B, food safety, and C, environmental integrity, and D, socioeconomic aspects. Now, it is expected that certification schemes should preferably address all the four issues and, as a minimum, the first three. The second is World Wildlife's ongoing initiatives regarding the development of global standards for responsible aquaculture for 12 species. The focus is to minimize, eliminate key environmental and social impacts. On organic aquaculture, this is relatively new and limited to relatively few countries and species. There has been growing recognition of the importance and benefits of sharing information on emerging issues and new developments. Reliable and timely flow of information avoids duplication of effort and reduces costs, encourages a consistency in areas such as policy planning and regulations. These benefits are being achieved through research and development, training and extension, networking, Information and communications technology, ICT, are an important vehicle for information sharing. The rapid growth of the aquaculture sector in the past decade has to a large extent been stimulated by the application of R&D-led technological innovations such as genetic improvement of farm fish, better health management practices, better feed management, and sophisticated designs of cages for fish culture in offshore sites. The Asia-Pacific region has contributed to breakthrough research programs, in particular the closing of the life cycle of southern bluefin tuna and the development of genetic improvement of farm tilapia, which is commonly known as GIF. With the exception of a few countries, for example in Egypt, R&D in Africa is at a preliminary stage. On training, Europe and North America have some of the leading academic and research institutions on aquaculture in the world. In Asia-Pacific, the level of aquaculture education and training has increased significantly. For example, in Vietnam, the number of aquaculture faculties increased from only 2 in 2000 to 8 in 2010, with the potential graduate output trained in aquaculture to over 700 each year. The Africa region is also undertaking various initiatives to increase the number of qualified aquaculture scientists. And a recent example is the launching of the Fisheries University Network, in brackets, in the FishNet, led by the New Partnership for African Development, the NEPAD. On networking, networks have been useful in sharing and exchanging information on new developments and issues, in promoting partnerships between education institutions and research institutions and industry, and in influencing policies and legislations. Now, some important networks are listed below. You know, you have from North America down to MENA, and in Professor Senna's presentation, he talked about the useful contributions made by NACA. In fact, it's considered as a successful network, you know. Next on ICT. Rapid advancements in ICT are creating new opportunities to communicate, analyze data, impart training, and share knowledge in a timely and cost-effective manner. There are some good examples of ICT-driven models. You know. For example, farmers in Aceh, Indonesia, affected by the tsunami of December 2004, received training advice and information services using websites and VOIP, which is Voice over Internet Protocol. Another contribution made by ICT is the development of what is known as Aquatic Commons by FAO. Basically, this is an important internet-accessible digital repository for the aquatic sciences, including both fisheries and aquaculture. Now I'm moving to the fourth and the final part of my presentation. This is on silent issues, challenges, and the way forward. Land and water. A major challenge, as earlier speakers have also mentioned, to sustainable development of aquaculture in many regions is the management of conflict of interest and competition for scarce land and water resources from economic development activities such as agriculture and tourism. To maximize land and water use efficiency, in an integrated approach is promoted, such as integrated aquaculture and fisheries, integrated multi-trophic aquaculture, and integrated aquaculture and agriculture, which Professor Swaminathan emphasized in his presentation also. In many countries, land use planning and zoning have led to efficient use of marine waters. Mariculture or open waters are increasingly being considered for aquaculture. On seeds, seeds are supplied from both wild produced and hatchery produced sources. As the industry continues to greatly benefit from aquaculture, biotechnology, and genomics research, use of hatchery produced seeds is expected to broaden in the future. The focus, however, should be on measures to improve the quality of seed. For example, good hatchery management practices and establishment of regional broodstock management centers. Aquatic genetic resources, this is something which is new. The use and exchange of aquatic genetic resources have contributed significantly to the development of global aquaculture. Genetic improvements are usually accomplished in areas outside of the species' native range. Access and benefit sharing, which is known as ABS, issues are beginning to be raised. For example, a move to allow Africa to access tilapia genetically improved in Asia. On feed, an ongoing debate which is concerning aquaculture is the sustainable use of fish meal and fish oil. The focus is more on salmon, Another issue is the use of the so-called fresh, low-value fish, for example, marine cage farming in China. There are both ecological and ethical concerns. For example, decline of wild catch and using fish that could be used for human nutrition. In 2008, about 71% and 90% of fish meal and fish oil were consumed in aquaculture practices. Rest amounts were mainly used in the livestock sector. However, production of fish meal and fish oil has varied around 5 to 6 million tons and 1 million tons in the past 20 years, despite continued growth in aquaculture. Moreover, 20% of raw materials used are based on rejected fish trimmings from fish processing. Continuing concerns have led to considerable investment in research to find alternative sources. In Dr. Lazar's presentation on Europe, he mentioned about the work being done by Aquamax, you know, regarding replacement of fish meal and fish oil. Now, according to International Fish Meal and Fish Oil Organization, the fish in and fish out ratio is falling. For salmon, it is 1.7 is to 1. And for all fed aquaculture, it is 0.5 is to 1. The International Fish Meal and Fish Oil Organization has also developed third-party audited global standard for responsible supply. On thrash low-value fish, the industry needs to develop suitable dry pellets, feeds, and make farmers aware of the benefits. On services, aquatic animal health is a high priority issue as major fish disease outbreaks in various parts of the world have disrupted aquaculture production, as we all know. For example, the recent EUS disease in the Zambezi River Valley. As preventive measures, many countries, for example, in the Northeast and North Africa region, have developed or are developing comprehensive national aquatic animal health management plans, such as, for example, in Canada and the USA, and strengthening the human capacity and physical facilities for diagnosis of fish diseases. In case of Europe, a major concern for the European aquaculture industry, as well as for global aquaculture, is the limited availability of licensed veterinary medicinal products for fish health. For example, long time required for licensing process. Some measures have been introduced, example, vaccine import for major diseases. On aquaculture capital, this is access to timely, affordable, and adequate capital is a major constraint, particularly by small-scale farmers in Africa and Asia. However, I want to emphasize that NGOs, you know, play an important role in providing financial support to small-scale farmers and poor farmers, for example, in Bangladesh. You know. In Asia, in India in particular, which Sena mentioned in his presentation, offers a good model which is being replicated in many countries for effectively providing financial and other aquaculture support services to small-scale producers through adoption of better management practices, you know, so-called BNPs, and formulation of aquaclubs / societies and clusters. Cluster organizations reduce transaction costs, offer economies of scale, and improve access to financial services. On insurance, the worldwide aquaculture insurance sector is still at a preliminary stage. Premiums have grown from around $100,000 in 1974 to $50 million in 2002 to $100 million at present. However, this represents a minuscule proportion of the value of the world's farm fish stocks. For small-scale farmers, a hybrid approach or layered system has been suggested. This is based on a workshop that was done by FAO in 2007, and this is being developed in Thailand right now. So what is this hybrid approach or layered system? Essentially, it is a combination of improved on-farm management based on adoption of better management practices, mutual insurance schemes, national involvement of national and international insurance and reinsurance companies, and government emergency disaster relief systems. On markets and trades, again, we heard this issue being mentioned by many speakers. With increasingly stringent requirements of export markets, governments need to develop strategies and programs that will safeguard small-scale farmers who could become marginalized due to the high cost of compliance. Governments need to facilitate development of small-scale farmers into producers' associations or cluster groups or self-help groups through capacity building on better management and marketing practices and other technical measures. For example, as in the case of shrimp farmers in India. Again, I'm referring to the concept which Professor Sinha mentioned in his presentation. Another issue is tariffs. So the issue of tariffs to protect domestic markets should be addressed in line with WTO rules and regulations. FAO's technical guidelines for responsible fish trade needs to be considered by concerned agents countries. To facilitate access to markets, governments need to provide adequate infrastructure development support to the industry, for example, quarantine facilities and rural road networks. On external pressure, climate change and global economic crisis are important external pressures or exogenous factors that could threaten the financial, social, and environmental sustainability of global aquaculture. On climate change, the impacts of climate change on global aquaculture are not yet fully known. However, there is general consensus among experts that the potential impacts of climate change on global aquaculture would broadly include rising sea surface temperatures, sea level rise, increasing ocean acidification, higher incidence of extreme weather events, and altered rainfall patterns and river flows. The resource-poor and marginalized groups, including women, are likely to be most vulnerable to climate change impacts. So policies and strategies need to enhance the resilience and adaptability of the aquaculture sector. Adaptation measures could include implementation of an ecosystem approach to aquaculture, application of BMPs, integrated aquaculture, including agro-aquaculture and multi-trophic aquaculture, implementation of aquaculture insurance schemes, capacity building on forecasting and early warning systems. Global economic crisis. A global economic crisis impacts countries in varying degrees depending on the strength of the economy. As an integral part of a country's economic sector, the aquaculture sector would not remain immune. For example, in developing countries, there is likely to be lower foreign direct investment and fall in official development assistance. According to an FAO study, this was done in 2009, there was an increase in the prices of inputs such as aqua feeds in the case of the recent economic crisis. As coping strategies, it has been suggested to increase dietary nutrient retention, lower feed conversion ratio, and improve natural productivity, for example, use of fertilizers in production systems. On contribution of aquaculture, there's a need for more systematic and precise assessment of the direct and indirect contributions of aquaculture to national, regional, and global economies, employment, poverty alleviation, and food security. More precise assessment will enable the sector to formulate well-informed development policies, strategies, and plans, and receive adequate funding, both from the government and from international organizations. FAO's recent initiative in 2009 and 2010 are positive steps. These are development of an assessment framework and ongoing work on small-scale aquaculture contributions and technical guidelines. On public perceptions, again, all the speakers have touched on this issue, so this is really an important one. Over the past decade, significant progress, has been made in addressing environmental and societal concerns. However, the benefits, for example, employment creation, protein supplementation of responsible and sustainable aquaculture practices tend to be overshadowed by some cases of unplanned management and improper practices of aquaculture. Nonetheless, the aquaculture sector should take notice of the public concerns and act in a transparent manner that would gain the trust and confidence of the public. FAO's certification guidelines, WWF's ongoing initiative in development of global standards for responsible aquaculture of 12 species, and EU-funded consensus program sustainability indicators are good approaches to address the image problem. Finally, a major challenge facing the global aquaculture sector's long-term goal to achieve economic, social, and environmental sustainability primarily depends on continued commitment by governments and international organizations to support the sector. It is encouraging that experience of the past decade indicates that many governments and international organizations remain committed. A recent example is commitments made at the November 2009 World Summit on Food Security to assist smallholders. It is hoped that as a new decade unfolds, a stronger and confident global aquaculture sector will stand ready to face and overcome the future challenges and move further along the sustaining path. Thank you very much.